Welcome back to Read Into Something. We're about to start another fun podcast episode brought to you by the Stone County Library. I'm Alice, and at my side today is Winky. And we're going to discuss Alice's pick of the month and the upcoming National Library Week. I spend a lot of time looking for books about World War II because for some reason I'm really interested in it. I guess it's because it was a horrible time for pretty much the entire world and therefore relatable. Well, I was having trouble coming up with a World War II book I hadn't read on our Libby app. Libby is a great app if you like reading on your phone or tablet. I use it fairly often, especially if there's like bad weather. I mean, I know bad weather's coming, yet I still don't pull a book off the shelf. I just open up the Libby app. So I was looking for World War I novels instead, because I also watched The Kingsman a couple of months ago. Wonderful movie, very funny. It's based on a comic book. It tells the origin of the Kingsman movies, but back to the point. I'm interested in World War I, but the book that comes up in my search only mentions World War I as one of the protagonists has a husband who's sent to fight. The book is called As Bright as Heaven by Susan Messner. It was published in 2018, so you might wonder why I didn't choose something newer for Book of the Month. But it's relevant to now, and after you hear the blurb, you'll realize why. In 1918, Philadelphia was a city teeming with promise. Even as its young men went off to fight in the Great War, there were opportunities for a fresh start on its cobblestone streets. Into this bustling town came Pauline Bright and her husband, filled with hope that they could now give their three daughters, Evelyn, Maggie, and Willa, a chance at a better life. But just months after they arrive, the Spanish flu reaches the shores of America. As the pandemic claims more than 12,000 victims in their adopted city, they find their lives left with a world that looks nothing like the one they knew. But even as they lose loved ones, they take in a baby orphaned by the disease who becomes their single source of hope. Amidst the tragedy and challenges, they learn what they cannot live without and what they are willing to do about it. As Bright as Heaven is the compelling story of a mother and her daughters who find themselves in a harsh world not of their making, which will either crush their resolve to survive or purify it. So, A, it's about a pandemic, and B, about a war. These situations don't just change the characters' lives, but also the face of the country, how we feel about our neighbors, and how these things make us who we are. The book starts off with Pauline Bright narrating. She lost her 6-month-old baby due to a heart problem, and she feels like death has been lurking around her ever since. Her husband works on his parents' tobacco farm in Pennsylvania, but the opportunity to learn how to become a mortician comes up. Pauline and Thomas decide that they need to move to Philadelphia, both to get away from the tragedy of losing their youngest child and to start a new, better life there. We all know morticians are never going out of business. In addition to the baby they lost, Pauline and her husband also have 3 daughters, which was in the blurb, Evelyn, Maggie, and Willa. There's something like 14, 12, and 6 or 7. They pick up, move to the city, meet Uncle Fred, who doesn't have any children and has always loved Thomas like a son. Uncle Fred is pretty gung-ho about the war effort and about kicking Germans out of America. He's also strict about where the girls can go in the house and what they can see because he doesn't think it's appropriate for them to be near dead bodies. He has the same rule for Pauline, and he doesn't think that she needs to see what goes on in the embalming room, but she's struggling with the loss of her son. And to her satisfaction, the woman who does hair and makeup on the bodies causes Uncle Fred some problems, so she has to take over those duties. She hopes to find a peace and understanding while she takes care of the funeral home clients and gives them some dignity in their final hours before they're buried. The book also tells the story from the point of view of the girls. I thought because of the way it's written they might be a little older than they are, because Maggie is suddenly falling in love with a neighbor across the street. She befriends his mentally handicapped brother and attempts to teach him reading because he had to drop out of school. So, like I said, remember Maggie is 12 and it's kind of creepy that she falls in love with Jamie, who's 18 and enlisted in the army. When it comes right down to it, the vast majority of the story is Maggie's because the plot really unfolds with the spread of the flu and the fact that she casually strolls into a house and steals a baby from a dead woman. But we'll get to that. Evelyn is the smart daughter who's curious about everything. Uncle Fred gives her permission to read his textbooks, particularly the ones about the history of death and embalming people. He pays for her tuition so she can go to a private school and get a really good education. Willa is the youngest, and as far as I'm concerned, she's a little snot. I like her least of all, and when she's the first in the family to come down with the flu, I was kind of hoping that would be the end of her. It's not. She mostly natters about her friends and how she can't be friends with the German girl down the street who has a little white dog, and she's a pest to her older sisters. One thing is clear about the girls and Thomas. Pauline is the glue holding them together. She might hallucinate that death is hanging out with her, but she's headstrong and determined to get what she wants. Thomas enlists in the war before he can be conscripted. He can't get out of it because Uncle Fred has money and he's too old to fight, so the family does have someone looking after them. Right then, the military was calling for every able-bodied man, so he's sent away for training as a medic, and then he can go overseas and help out. Jamie, the handsome next-door neighbor, is also in Europe, France, I believe, and Maggie writes to him frequently, but she only gets a few letters back from him. There are rumors circulating about the flu, but hardly anyone thinks about it the day there's a patriotic parade in Philadelphia. I had to look it up, but 200,000 people attended that parade, so no wonder it spread as quickly as it did. By the following week, many of the residents were down with the flu. Everything shut down in the city. Sound familiar? The death toll climbs, and Uncle Fred, now working by himself again, is overwhelmed with bodies. People sometimes just dump their loved ones on his doorstep and hope he can find a casket to bury them because they don't know what else to do. Pauline is asked by the ladies at her church if she can help deliver soup to sick people. Some of them are in foreign parts of town where almost no one speaks English. She agrees, and Maggie begs to be allowed to go. She relents, and they set off to bring food to poor invalids. The situation on the street is dire, and Pauline forbids Maggie to enter the building she's supposed to visit. Maggie's told to stay on the sidewalk within sight of the building. I think you can guess that Maggie does exactly the opposite. She hears a baby crying and follows the sound. Through a window, she sees a little girl on a couch, presumably dead, but the baby keeps crying on. She lets herself in and goes past the dead girl to the bedroom where the baby is alone in his crib, and there's a dead woman in the bed in there. The Spanish flu, which probably didn't come from Spain, although we do know it came from birds, was very similar to other flus with fever, chills, dry cough, fatigue, headache, sore throat, you know, the usual. It was extremely capable of replicating itself, and it often led to the victim getting pneumonia. For whatever reason, sometimes the same day people came down with the symptoms, they also died from it. And often choking on their own blood, so it was gruesome stuff. Back to Maggie and the baby. Naturally, she feels sorry for him because she believes his sister is dead and his mother definitely is. It appears that he's been alone for days with no one taking care of him. Pauline goes back outside and discovers her daughter's missing, but fortunately it doesn't take long for them to find one another and for them to decide the only thing to do is to take the baby home with them. They do attempt to find the baby's relatives, but they don't have any luck. Then the flu strikes at home. Willa was visiting one of her friends whose brother came down with the flu. She carried it back home, got ill, and poor Pauline barricaded herself in Willa's room, determined to save her daughter. Well, Willa comes through, but Pauline falls ill. All this while, there are bodies piling up on the doorstep, and Uncle Fred is freaking out because there's a baby that doesn't belong to them in his house. Spoiler alert, Paula her name is not Paula. Spoiler alert, Pauline dies. I'm not even joking. What really got me was that only Willa and Pauline came down with the flu, skipped right over everyone else very handily. Even the baby that was obviously exposed to it and suffered from malnutrition. So with the death of his wife, Thomas returns from boot camp, never having made it overseas. And wouldn't you know, the night he and Uncle Fred get Pauline ready to be buried, Uncle Fred dies too. Now Thomas has three girls and the baby they've dubbed Alex to raise on his own. Reading about Pauline's death was gut-wrenching. She was very accepting of it and thankful that Willa survived, so she went straight into death's embrace. Honestly, she didn't even have time to get close to Alex. His caregiving went straight to Maggie and Evelyn. So the book jumps a few years ahead. The war's over and Jamie returned home. His brother died of the flu. But Jamie is a changed man. He saw and did things in the war that he has trouble dealing with. One morning he leaves and Willa's the only one to witness his departure. Time goes by and Maggie finds herself engaged to a nice young man. Evelyn's going to college to become a psychiatrist, one of the first women to do so. And Willa, that little snit is sneaking out of the house. She's 14. To sing at speakeasies because prohibition is on. She nearly gets caught when one of the speakeasies is raided. Remember the German girl that she couldn't be friends with? Well, that girl died of the flu, but her father is at the speakeasy that's raided, and he helps get Willa to safety and makes her swear she won't do it again. Guess who does it again? But while she's sneaking in, she discovers Jamie on the back porch. He's coming to terms with his past. However, it stirs up trouble for Maggie's engagement since she still loves him and he loves her. And Evelyn, while working at a sanatorium, has a troubling patient. a young woman who tried to kill herself feels like she has no reason to live. She's been accused of murdering her little brother by tossing him in the river during the pandemic. She suffers from tremendous guilt about it. While digging around trying to discover what might be the cause of the girl's dilemma, Evelyn discovers an upsetting secret that could turn the whole family upside down. I'm not going to say it, but I think you can figure out what it is. In the beginning, I thought the book was long-winded. I even let it go back to Libby without finishing it. It seemed to take a while to get to the plot points about the flu and the baby, but I said to myself, I'd like to read the end of that and see what happened. Instead of just going to the end, I started where I left off, and I was glad I did. It was a definite tearjerker, and I had so much sympathy for Jamie's character and for the girl who tried to hang herself. I really could have done without Willa, did not care for her character even a little bit. The only thing Willa and I agreed on was the weird love triangle that Evelyn gets mixed up in. I can't even get into it because it's one of those things you have to discover for yourself. One that seems a bit far-fetched with everything else that was going on as the plot progressed. I give it 3.5 stars based on the fact that I thought it was long-winded and that I had to read parts of it from Willa's point of view. The part about the baby's family was contrived, but the reasons that the baby came into their lives worked for the story. It helped them all adjust after Pauline's death in the middle of the book. Me, I went on in tears for several chapters before I came to terms with her death. If I were to give it stars based solely on the emotional reaction I had, it's a solid 4. I was glad that Jamie figured himself out and was able to return to his family. Whether or not he finds love with Maggie is for you to discover, I'm not telling. Willa, even after getting caught by the German man and promising she wouldn't go back, but continued to do it anyway, really hacked me off. Does she think her mother would be proud of what she's doing? Because there's no way. And her poor father, who lost Uncle Fred and his wife in the space of a day, who devoted himself to the funeral home and his children and never found love again, what would he think? What she was doing was illegal. So frustrating. She didn't get any comeuppance for her actions. If you cut her out of the book, you wouldn't lose anything. Moving on from that, National Library Week is April 3rd through the 9th, so go to your library and check out lots of books and other media. At the Crane Branch, we're going to have a poster board up with markers so you can tell us what your favorite thing about the library is. Plus, I'm going to set out some coloring pages because sometimes you just need to use your crayons. Fun facts about National Library Week. In the mid-1950s, research showed Americans were spending less on books and more on radios, televisions, and musical instruments. Gasp! Concerned that Americans were reading less, the ALA and the American Book Publishers formed a nonprofit citizens organization called National Book Committee in 1954. The committee's goals were ambitious. They ranged from encouraging people to read in their increasing leisure time, to improve incomes and health, and developing strong and happy family life. With the cooperation of ALA and with help from the Advertising Council, the first National Library Week was observed in 1958 with the theme, Wake Up and Read. The Library of Congress is the largest library in the world, with more than 167 million items on approximately 838 miles of bookshelves, which would span roughly the distance from the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. to Cape Canaveral, Florida. Americans go to public libraries more often than they go to the movies. And there are more public libraries than Starbucks in the U.S., a total of 16,568, including branches. Nearly 100% of public libraries provide Wi-Fi and have no fee access to computers. Next time on Read Into Something, we're going to discuss Death on the Nile, which released in theaters in February and is coming to DVD in May, but it's already on Amazon Prime if you're a subscriber. Remember, if you enjoy reading to something, please leave us a review or a rating. It means a lot to us. Thanks. The webpage has every episode on most listening platforms. Simply go to podpage.com/read-into-something. Disclaimers, views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to Alice and not necessarily to her employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual.